A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 488. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about The Trapdoor. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This was an ITV claymation children's show from 1986. It had two series and ran for a total of 40 episodes of about 4 to 5 minutes each. They were short episodes. And it's a funny, humorous mixture of gothic horror themes with kind of silly and ridiculous plasticine-type creatures, you know, done with claymation.
And it's short, it's colourful, it's funny, it's at times slightly scary. It's almost perfect for children's television. And that's what we're going to be talking about, covering The Trapdoor.
Yes, it has a touch of scariness, but at the time it's kind of cheerful and silly too.
So the setup, somewhere in a dark and nasty castle lives Burke, the overworked servant of the unseen thing that lives in the rooms upstairs above him. And Burke must attend to the many, many needs of his master while trying also to keep track of a variety of other bizarre creatures who visit his basement. He always has a full load, unfortunately, Burke. He's very busy.
He does seem to be, yes. And while doing all of this, there are various threats and unfriendly creatures and sometimes friendly creatures that emerge from the trapdoor that is in the main basement area that we see.
Opening up the very trapdoor of the title.
Absolutely. So looking at the characters, there aren't that many, but there are a few for us to talk about. Burke is a blue-skinned sort of globular creature with a couple of blinking eyes perched on the top of him, and he is constantly busy trying to cook for his master or deal with the various physical ailments and things that his master is dealing with. And he goes up to his master and sends things up to his master through a little elevator type contraption, and he is constantly distracted by his friends and by the various creatures that come through the trapdoor. And Burke is voiced by Willie Rushton in this sort of West Country accent with a variety of sort of made up swear word type things peppered throughout.
And we'll be hearing some of those as we go along. Burke, of course, has got some friends or associates, particularly Boney, a disembodied skull who provides some wise words and advice for Burke, or at least he does when he's not asleep. Again, this voiced by Willie Rushton, this time with a sort of posher, more dignified accent, almost Karloffian tone to the voice of Boney, I thought.
Yes, there is a bit of that there, I guess, yeah. Drutt is Burke's pet, really, a small spider-like creature with a series of squeaks and whistles. Drutt doesn't actually speak, and the show's editor, Nick Shipley, was doing some of those sounds.
And then, of course, we've mentioned him, the thing upstairs, the unseen master of this castle, a loud and echoey voice from above that's always demanding attention from Burke, demanding food or medical attention, a variety of problems for Burke to solve. Again, voiced by Willie Rushton, this time with a Cockney accent for the thing upstairs. This rather loud, booming voice that summons Burke all the time. I should say that Willie Rushton, we'll come back to him, but it's great, funny voices.
Yes, and a very big one in that case. And we almost never see the thing upstairs, if we see him at all. But they have this sort of lift that they send things up to the thing upstairs and occasionally go up to him that way as well. So it's sort of separate, and this voice that we hear, and Burke will sometimes disappear to go upstairs and then come back again. And there were some other voices as well, often provided by Rushton or by Terry Brain.
Lots of great voices.
yeah, for sure. And as the show's theme tune tells us, you should never open the trap door in the floor of Burke's basement. But of course, they almost always do. Either open it or something from underneath pushes it open, and some new strange thing comes through in just about every episode.
Indeed, some new horror for Burke and his associates to deal with. Lots of creepy crawlies, strange beasts. Some of them will turn out to be friendly and become recurring characters. Or in an episode, someone will fall through the trapdoor and have an adventure of their own while Burke is inevitably distracted by the thing upstairs. As we've sort of, I think, given the impression, the thing upstairs needs an awful lot of looking after, it seems, Brian.
It does seem that way, yeah.
Now, you'll probably get the impression that as this is a show for younger viewers, we should say a lot of it is quite repetitive in nature. We'll talk about that a bit more in our next episode. But it is a show designed for younger viewers. Repetition is obviously part of it, helpful for them to sort of understand the show and the characters.
Yes, I think that's about right. So getting into the production notes, the road to the trapdoor probably starts with some earlier children's TV episodes from the 1970s. In particular, a show we've mentioned occasionally was called Vision On, which ran from 1964 through 1976. And it was quite groundbreaking. It was produced for deaf children and children who were hard of hearing. So it was meant to be a very visual show. And in 1972, Peter Lord and David Sproxton formed Aardman Animations to produce some animated sequences for Vision On.
They did. And this included some claymation characters called the Gleebies, which went out on Vision On in 1975. Now, 1975 is after my Vision On period, Brian, so I don't remember the Gleebies, but I do remember as a younger child the sort of magic of Vision On, the gallery sequences and the animations, which were lovely. So it's fascinating to get a chance to talk about this. And of course, the Gleebies sort of inspired Lord and Sproxman to take it one step further and to create a character called Morph, a little clay man who would become a star on the artist Tony Hart's shows. That's Take Heart and Smart. And Morph was a delightful character.
Did Morph start on Vision On as well?
No, Morph starts in 77 on Take Heart.
Interesting stuff. It's fascinating how Vision On was intended for deaf and hard of hearing children and then grew to be a much broader thing that was popular with all sorts of children. And I think they did start adding music and some things like that, but there was always a very strong visual component to it.
Very much so. And like I say, it's wonderful for us to have a chance to note the artistic contributions of Vision On and of Tony Hart and of Morph, wonderful part of children's television in the 60s, 70s, and going on into the 1980s.
Absolutely. So Morph, this is now on Tony Hart's art shows, would emerge from a wooden box on Hart's table and speak in gibberish and have little adventures with an ever-expanding cast of characters.
Indeed, yeah, wonderful character.
Yeah, and Morph inspired all sorts of people to combine plasticine creations and stop motion photography. So it sort of popularized claymation in the UK in a way that it hadn't been before. And that included these two young animators, Terry Brain and Charlie Mills, who had met at school and managed to get jobs working on Take Heart. And they then formed their own companies, CMTB Animations and Queensgate Productions.
And interestingly, it seems that when they formed their own company, initially they were doing little claymation animations to be used in corporate training videos, which I suppose is you've got to start somewhere, Brian. But of course, that's not what they really wanted to do. They wanted to do children's television. And they did manage to convince ITV to commission a series called The Trapdoor. And regular listeners will know I'm going to love this next bit. They moved into a disused motorcycle factory called Kingswood on the outskirts of Bristol. If you're familiar with our previous shows about claymation, you'll know that Bristol was a, and still is, a hotbed for British stop-motion animation. And there they are in this factory. They've recruited another enthusiastic animator, a young man called Steve Box, who was also, a bit like themselves, fresh out of school. This is a very young startup company back in the 70s.
Yeah, it's always cool to hear about these groups of people figuring things out in these odd spaces and coming up with something unexpected, like I think happened here. Brain and Mills managed to get a UK government grant from the youth training program, and that gave them £20 a week to pay the then teenager Steve Box.
Yeah, youth training schemes were a thing at the time, and I read an interview with Steve Box where he talked about this and said that as part of the grant was that an inspector from local government would have to come and visit you at your workplace. And he says they were absolutely appalled at this, what they regarded as a derelict factory building that they were working in. And once again, Brian, you know I love a story of improvised workplaces, cottage industries building up like this.
Oh, I hope they didn't lose their grant over that. I hope they talked their way out of it.
Yeah.
Both Terry Brain and Steve Box would later go on to work for Aardman on Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run, and then Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit. So getting into that whole group with some very successful stuff. The episodes of Trapdoor were written by Brain and Charlie Mills.
And then Terry Brain and Steve Box are making the models for the characters. They're doing the sort of main plasticine sculpting, while Charlie Mills is doing the wonderful sort of painted and very colourful backdrops of the sets and the opening titles of a castle on a hill, very dark and lonely looking place. So again, it's a team effort. Steve Box then has to animate the characters around the stories that they'd come up with. He said they were on such a shoestring budget that they were sort of doing a sort of blind, what he referred to as a blind animation technique. He had no storyboards to work for, and I don't think initially they even had a sort of video monitor to play back the animations. They were just sort of winging it, I think, initially, Brian.
Yeah, they would have been basically setting up their models for each and every frame and running one frame of film, so almost like using a still camera at that point, and going one by one, and they hope they get something that works at the end. And Box has said that you see the quote-unquote lumps and bumps in earlier episodes, but their performances improved quickly as they got better at it and the show moved on. The models of Boney and Drutt both had actual mouths, which they could move according to the scripts to make the dialogue happen, where Burke's mouth was a sticker. So they had these painted stickers, which they would add and remove to match for the dialogue for each frame.
And then, of course, they get Willie Rushton himself to come in and record the voices. A British comedian, an actor, co-founded Private Eye magazine, would you believe? He was, of course, a regular panel on the BBC's long-running radio show, I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue. you know, British radio listeners will be familiar with that show, which has run for decades, and Willie Rushton was an amazing part of it. You won't be surprised to hear that Willie Rushton added several ad-libs and jokes to the script as he went along, including apparently many of Burke's strange swear words, particularly "Oh, Globbits," which has sort of become one of the catchphrases from the show that Burke will exclaim at various moments when he's exasperated.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if they actually recorded that dialogue before they did the claymation, because they, I'm guessing, would have been matching the mouth movements to what he had recorded that way. But it wasn't entirely clear from what I saw.
Yeah. I think possibly, again, as their animation improved, they started matching it to Willie Rushton's vocals. Initially, as I say, I think for the first few episodes, they're winging it slightly based on their scripts.
Yeah. That makes sense. There was a very catchy theme tune for the show, and that was written by the songwriter Bob Heatley and recorded by a group called Zygott.
And if you've heard this theme tune, it will stick in your head.
It is a catchy one.
It is. The theme tune to the Trapdoor is one of those themes from British television that is just sticks with people. And even people who can't really remember much about the show will remember the theme tune and be able to sing part of it to you.
Very nice. The Trapdoor was first broadcast on ITV in a mid-afternoon slot starting on October 6th, 1986.
And as we've said, these are 5-minute episodes. They can fit into a schedule quite easily. They were later repeated by ITV in their Saturday morning kids magazine style shows. One was called Motormouth, one was called Ghost Train. And as you can imagine, Brian, they're fairly easy to drop in a 5-minute trapdoor here and there through the running time of those Saturday morning shows. And then later on in the 90s, Channel 4 started repeating the trapdoor in their early morning schedules. Again, I think a quick 5 minutes in the morning, possibly before children go off to, you know, infant school or kindergarten or whatever, works very well. They can fit them in anywhere in a schedule.
Yeah, interesting.
So it's availability time. Should you decide to watch The Trapdoor, here's how you can do it. In Region 2, there was a series of extremely popular VHS tapes in the late 1980s. As you can imagine, they're now very hard to find. But in 2005, we were very lucky. We got all the episodes released on a DVD set. That is currently £20. Or you can buy it over here on Prime Video or on Apple for £5 for each of the two series to stream it. And it's not streaming anywhere else for free at the moment, but you can get it on streaming, which is where I've been watching it, Brian.
Very nice. Here in Region 1, there were VHS releases, including a rare Canadian double VHS tape that had all 40 episodes, but there has not been a Region 1 DVD release. The imports of the Region 2 DVD are currently on Amazon Marketplace for about $30 US or $50 Canadian.
Okay, well, at least you can get hold of this series. And you can, of course, come back and join us next time when we're opening up the trapdoor again to talk about some of the creatures that emerge from the trapdoor. But also we'll talk a little bit about gothic horror for kids. And there's some spin-offs from this show for us to talk about next time as well, Brian.
Absolutely. We will also have our reviews and recommendations for this piece of claymation history. Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there and join in on the conversations. You can also follow us on Instagram and on Threads. We are at British_Invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
Excellent stuff. Do find us on the socials, and do find us as part of the Voice of Geeks Network for gaming, Twitch streaming, podcasts, and much, much more. The Voice of Geeks at VogNetwork.com. Tell them Brian and Eamon said hello.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.